which at least on this level can give me, beyond that, is subject to forces beyond our control. Both are running already? Okay. At least I can tell you that today is Sunday, the 23rd of September, 2012, and we're Bein Kesel La'asa. And it's a difficult period for us. We lost a young soldier on Friday, and it depresses every Jew. Lost him. You know what he was doing? They were giving water to the Mistonanim, to the Africans who are caught there, and the enemies of humanity knew what we do, and they ambushed. But what's amazing is we killed two of the terrorists on the spot. The third one was killed after a chase, a mirdaf, and a woman, a female soldier, killed the third terrorist. So the papers today, you see headlines that Chayelet, wow. So my wife and I were talking about it. Is it good for the Jews or bad for the Jews? I'll leave the topic open. Before I begin, I just want to make one correction and throw out one thought. One of the letters that came into the office from a Mutti Katz, from what I see, he's a student in Satmar, or teaches in Satmar, but he had some very interesting comments on my shiurim. But he has a correction. And remember I told you at the kotel, at the paratrooper swearing in, I had a grandson being sworn in a few weeks ago, and Chassidim walked by, and one Chassid is wearing a shtreimel. So I jokingly said, you see, this is really a Chassid who loves Eretz Yisrael. When he comes to a paratroop swearing, he wears a shtreimel. So the person next to me, Chassidish guy, said, no, they wear the first year of marriage, they wear a shtreimel. So I'm now corrected. It's not the first year of marriage, it's the week of Sheva Brachas. So I want to correct myself. Unless there's one Hasidic sect that the Takar wears a shtreimel the entire first year. The other thing that Mati Katz writes, there are other nice vetlach here, but what's very interesting is, you all know that I commented on the Sima Shas. So he raises the issue whether you're allowed to have the Siyum Hashas in a, what was it, a football stadium. Am I correct? In Secaucus. And he bases it, there's a tshuva of Moshe. I write about this tshuva, actually. If you have Rakafet Aaron, you can look up in my article on Rav Moshe, you'll see I write about this tshuva. Without going into great detail, it's the young Israel of St. Louis on his first beginning. So as all young Israels are, they're breakaways from established shuls. So the chief rabbi of St. Louis, Rav Menachem Eichenstein, turned to Rav Moshe, are they allowed to rent a ballroom? That's where they began. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they had evidently during the week, they may have had a storefront, but Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you need room. So they rented a ballroom in a hotel. No, a ballroom, what do you have there? You have mixed dancing, you have lewd entertainment. And Rav Moshe writes about it. So even Rav Moshe was not too happy with davening in such a place. So this Mutti Katz says he has a problem that they held the Siyum Hashas in a mukam of Toeva, like Rav Moshe's Tshuva to St. Louis. So I don't know whether he's right or wrong, but you can think about it. A stadium for football, how do you view it? And Rakefet is not for me. It would, what if they rented Yankee Stadium where it's a baseball? Is baseball a less Toeva? It could be, because in football, one kills the other one. Whereas in baseball, even though one player was taka killed in the history of baseball in the 1920s, Ben Chapman was killed by a pitch by Carl Mays, if you recall that. And that's the only time anyone was killed in Major League Baseball, and it was an accident. But in football, they mamish punch into each other, beat up each other. So it's an interesting shaila. But anyway, I don't want to take away from the beauty of the Siyum Hashas, and it mamish was a great achievement, the Kiddush Hashem. And the only part that I suffered was Halavai, that stadium would have been lifted up and transported to Yerushalayim with another 100,000 Jews in it, and it would be Lahagdil Torah Lahadira, and to enhance and sanctify our presence, Alat Mata Kodesh. And enough is said, or I'll get involved already with the Shmon Esrei of Musaf. Ubayom ahu yitaka b'shofar gadol uvoho avdim b'yeretz hashua v'anidachim b'yeretz Mitzrayim v'shtachavu l'Hashem b'ha ha-kodesh Yerushalayim. And we who have made Aliyah, we have every right to say that pasuk. Your parents have every right to say that pasuk loud and clear. Now, we're coming into the heart of halacha today, the heart of the halachic system. Yitz Rubin, I just want to tell him, he asked me where Yontif Sheni, it's in Shulchan Aruch HaRechayim, Taf Tzadi Vav. And you'll find it right away, just look into it's Chelech HaMishi, just look into the index to the Mishnah Berurah, it's right at the start of Hilchot Yontif, Taf Tzadi Vav. And everything I quoted was correct, but you asked me the exact simon, and that's the simon. Here, you can pass this back to Yitzchak. And Yaakov, remind me after class, I have something for you in the closet as well. Okay, so just to recall what we're doing, we're in the middle of a series of Sheyurim that began back in, 1978, dealing with halacha, responsible literature, and dealing with it on a broader level and a bit of scientific Jewish scholarship, and it's thrown in as well to see the greater picture. It's a result of my own training, my own learning, that I was privileged both to spend many years at the foot of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and that I was exposed yet to the Wissenschaft tradition on a very wonderful level, among them Gedolei Yisrael, Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, Had Gedolei Masheva Aretz. So it reflects in my thinking, my learning, my teaching, my understanding. Now, so we're now dealing with how to paskin a shaila, and after many months of last year when we discussed which is more important, a tshuva or a psak sefer, very interesting topic, we're pausing now to discuss minhag. What is minhag? How does minhag affect halacha? And in the shir before Rosh Hashanah, we spoke about two Yerushalmis, where the Yerushalmi says very brazen words, minhag mevatel halacha, that a custom can abrogate, to negate a halacha. I mean, these are very shocking words. For those of us raised in the Torah world, for the New York Times, it may not be so shocking. But for we who are committed Jews, these are shocking words. And I showed you two sugyas. One sugya is a very, not a difficult sugya. It deals with a hiring a laborer and minig hamakom, that this man says to the laborer, you got to work for me from sunrise until sunset. And the laborers work, and they start at 9 o'clock, they finish at 4 o'clock, and the balabas doesn't want to pay them the full wages. He said, you cheated on me. So logically speaking, the balabas should be right, and the workers should not get full wages. And yet the Gemara says, the Yerushalmi says, that the balabas does not have a case. If the minhag hamakom is to start work at 9 and end at 4, minhag mevatel halacha. Right? That was one gemara. Then we came to a second sugya, which is a much more difficult sugya, and I tried my best to make it as clear as possible. I've heard many lectures on Yibum and Nal and Sandal and what was the other word for socks? I've heard many lectures. And all these lectures simply confused me. But I try to make it as clear as possible when the Torah talks about the impilia. So when the Torah talks about Yibun, when he has to pull off the shoe, you need a shoe, I quoted to you, the Yerushalm, I quoted to Panei Moshe, you need a shoe that is, it has its strength, it surrounds the foot, it creates warmth for the foot. So what about a sandal, which is not as strong? So the Gemara says clearly that a sandal people used, but a sock they didn't use. And the Gemara says, if Eliyahu HaNavi would come along and tell us we're not doing the proper thing if we use a sandal, a sandal, we would tell him, Eliyahu HaNavi, with all due respects to you, we pour a kos for you on Pesach, but what you're telling us now is absolutely wrong. Minhag mevatel halacha. And that's a very, very powerful Gemara. And now I want to go further. And what adds to our quandary, what adds to our quagmire, is fine. One Gemara is talking about Dine Mamonet. All right. Dine Mamonet. Do you work a full day? When does the day begin? Dine Mamonet is not the end of the world. But the second Gemara by Yevamot is talking about Issa Veheta. Issa Veheta is the end of the world. How do we explain it? And I want to devote the next few Shiurim to explaining it and giving you basic understanding of what I will call the halachic process, the dynamics of halacha. Danny, do you notice the terms I use? Do you understand what I'm differentiating myself from? The conservative world. Or what once was the conservative world. Today's conservative world doesn't exist. It's Reform Judaism. But one time, we'll come to it dafka in the Monday class. We'll come to it tomorrow in the Monday class. You'll understand a little bit more of who I'm differentiating myself from, the dynamics of the halacha. My dear students, and first of all, I want to thank you all for being here. It warms my heart, and it enhances my health, which is something at your age you don't comprehend yet. But at my age, I met friends of mine in wheelchairs. Don't ask. I got this report, that report. And I walk into class, and I just lost 50 years in a few minutes' time. And the bigger miracle will be that I won't gain back the 50 years until after Yom Kippur. That's going to be the bigger miracle. My dear students, when it comes to Dine Mamonet, Ein Hachinami, Minhag is the determining factor. The whole Chol Shemishpat and many of the laws we have in the Torah, when it comes to Dine Mamonet, I would use the words, these laws are guidance, but they're not obligatory. Minhag ultimately determines all of Dine Mamonet. Now, I'll give you sources, I'll explain myself. But what do I mean by that? For instance, I'll give you an example from graduate school. I took a very interesting course. Anyone who has studied halacha in a graduate school configuration. So you have a term. No one knows for sure what the term means. It's an Arabic term, marufia. How many of you have heard that term? How many of you have seen it in the Marami Rottenberg, in other Rishonim? Marufia. What does marufia mean? Probably it means monopoly. What does it mean, monopoly? Jews had to work for a living. And occasionally Jews worked out an arrangement with non-Jews, for instance, wine. We were the biggest producers of wine. You all know that my classmate, Hagon, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, who you call, what's the word that the students use for him? Hagrach, Dr. Grach, Dr. Gon Reb Chaim, who's here right now. So, you know, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, for all the reasons are, devoted a good deal of his life to the study of wine. He is the greatest living expert in the world on the halakha of wine, on the story of wine, on the manufacture of wine during the Middle Ages. His volume, Yenon, is unbelievable as a synthesis between old-fashioned Talmud Torah, which is the heart of our learning, and Chachmat Yisrael. The man is a genius of geniuses. Kishmo Kenhu, Chaim Halevi Soloveitchik. So we were tremendous providers of wine. We grew wine. There are maps in his book that shows you where the greatest wine country was in Franco Germany. And then the maps will show you where the Jews lived. And Yecheskel, you will see that the Jews lived exactly where they manufactured wine. Now, let's say, Steve Breslau, fine, you're a wine manufacturer. So you have a deal with certain clergy from the Catholic Church that you provide wine for them. You have a deal with some wholesalers for Gentiles. You provide wine. You have a monopoly. Can another Jew come along and break into your monopoly and undercut you and undersell you and undermine you? You know how much you can find in the Rishonim on this topic? But there was never a question that what is the determining factor here? Minhag HaMakom. It's not so much halacha that will determine. It's not so much the sources you will come up with. It is the minhag hamakom that will determine. Now, you know where else you see this? I'll give you another example on a much broader. That's one little example, because I once took a course with Professor Agus, Avram Yitzchak Agus, Agushevitz. Then they Hebrew, they Americanized the name Agus. I trust Professor Agus. He was Agushevitz. That's the family name. There were three brothers. One was more brilliant than the other. One taught at YU. He was Harry Fischel's son-in-law from Harry Fischel's second wife. So he once headed up the Harry Fischel Institute here. They wound up in America. And I want to tell you, I owe him a debt of gratitude, because I wrote my MA thesis on the Cleves Get. And the person who should have sponsored me, who was the expert of that era, was too busy. And Dr. Agus sponsored me, although it wasn't in his era. He was an expert in Rishonim, not in early Achronim. And I always owe him a debt of gratitude, so let me say it. But he was a very interesting individual. Did you study with him, Yitzchak? Did you study? So you know what I'm talking about. His brother Jacob was the Talmud Mufak of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. And Rabbi Dov Revel knew what became of his brother Jacob, the biggest reconstructionist rabbi in the Baltimore area. And it was said that when Talmidim from Ne'er Yisrael had a problem with understanding a Gemara, they used to go to talk with Jacob Agus. And by the way, he did his doctorate on Rav Kook. Banner of Jerusalem was his doctorate on Rav Kook. And from one family, the third brother was a medical doctor, I think he still used the name Agushevitz. I don't think he used the name Agus. He was a doctor in Borough Park, and he was from, not like Jacob, but it's, I wonder if any of Jacob's descendants came back. I hope they did, b'lei v'nefesh.
He had a very good correspondence with Toynbee.
No, I know. Right, the fossil and the Toynbee, maskinish kachat. But coming back to Erwin Agus, Avram Yitzchak, who I studied with, he gave an entire course on what is Marufia. His doctorate was on the Marami Rutenberg, and he knew all the tshuvot of the Marami Rutenberg. And it's fascinating. You get involved with monetary issues, and they're looking, what is the minhag hamakom? But I can tell you more than that. And I'll only give you, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Vav Amid Bet, Daf Zayin Amid Aleph. You look into that tomorrow, you'll understand something else. When I was a young rabbi, and this issue, what do we mean a young rabbi? What does that mean? I'm preparing lectures on the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I don't think I'll reach it this year, but I am preparing, I'm involved, I'm working, you have no idea what I've uncovered. And tell me, is there anything wrong with the young person thinking that he can be Mashiach? Is there anything wrong with that? When I went into the rabbinate, I really believed, and remember, I went into the rabbinate younger than you. We were thrown out of the yeshiva before there was any kollel. In my days, you knew how to learn or you didn't know how to learn. But there was no kollel. I was 23 years old, you're out into the world. You're thrown into the lion's den at the age of 23. No, I really believed I could make every Jew who speaks English into a Shomer Shabbos. No, I'm crazy. You're right. But is there something wrong with that? Okay. So now, here I am in the rabbinate, my second shteller. You all know my first shteller. I got killed, the treif bottle of wine. You should know until today, there are one or two people still alive who are mad at me because I embarrassed that balabas by telling him the wine was not kosher. You should know, I'm telling you a fact, that 51, 52 years later, shows you what a balabas is. I long since forgave them and thanked them. They turned me into a man. They made a mensch out of me, made a speaker out of me, made a teacher out of me, made a human being out of me. And I, if you want to know how I know this, you can ask me after class. But until today, unbelievable. Then I come to my second shtela, where Baruch Hashem, we have some success. So who's my mentor? Rav Teitz. Rav Pinchas Mordechai Teitz. He was my mentor. So a number of times, I sat in on Dinei Torah with him. No, did you ever sit in the Din Torah? Dinei Mamonet. Here's the way the Din Torah would begin. Rabbi Teitz is the Avbeist, and I'm sitting there, and Rabbi Zuber Roselle Park was Eichet. He was a Lubavitcher by birth. I think he boasted to me that the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe called him Alamdem Bistu of Gereisa Shegetz. You're a big Talmud Chacham, but you're a Shegetz. I know he was boasting. He had a genius mind, but he was a character. Baruch Hashem. So we're sitting there in the Din Torah, and I watch the way Rav Teitz begins, and then I learned this is the way every Din Torah begins. He scares the hell out of the people. Do you want us to go with the letter of the law, which can be very harmful, and may cause much tension, and monetary loss? Or do you want us to seek a pshara, a compromise, that will enhance the dignity of Torah and enable you to live with each other in contentment and understanding without animosity and enmity? Or do you want the strict letter of the law, which may destroy you? And these people are shaking. Rabbi, we want a compromise. You want a compromise? Fine. Sign this document. And there it is. We make a Kabbalat Kinyan. There's a document. You'll see if you learn Chol Shemishpat, you know what I'm talking about. So I want to ask you a question. What is this all about? It's based upon the Gemara in Sanhedrin. This is the Gemara the Rav spoke about at the RCA in 1977. The Rav developed it intellectually, philosophically. No, what do you mean compromise? A Jew comes along, Rebbe, I want to observe Shabbos like you paskin on second day Yontif. A day and a half lechumra. I want to observe Shabbos till 12 o'clock. It's too hard for me to observe until 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night. You know, this article that the Jewish Week, how they come up with these articles is beyond me. From kids are sending messages on their chveis. I don't understand it all, but I know my kids, my wife, everyone's sending messages. No one talks to each other today. They're sending messages. Baruch Hashem. Okay? I want to send messages. Well, what are you, out of your mind? Rabbi, these laws of kashrut are too disturbing. You know what? I want to have fish in a treif restaurant. What can be so bad? I want to have fish in a treif restaurant. I'm traveling. I can't find kosher food, etc. No, when anyone speaks like that, you smack his face. What are you, a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, hated, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, debauched, surreptitious, malevolent, no good, bummied, ice fluff? Come on, a pushtak. Gotta get rid of the guy. Right or wrong? A paya. You didn't know what the word Poyah means. That was when our Rebbeim went crazy. Poyah was the worst word. But I knew it. I knew it from my grandfather. It's a Russian word for a peasant, an ignoramus, a Poyah, like an Amoritz to the second power. What's going on here? Shabbos kashrut. But when it comes to Dini Mamonot, Minhag Taka can be Mavatel Halacha. This is an amazing concept. It's a very basic concept. Now, how do I know it? It's a number of places in Shas. Take one example, a Sugyam Bab Mitzia. Very simple Sugya. You all know the halacha of the Dalet Shomrin. If you don't know, you can just look it up very easily. Hilchat Schirut, Perik Aleph, Halacha Bet in the Rambam. All right, the Dalet Shomrin. What do we talk about Dalet Shomrin? Shomechinam is not Chayav on Geneva. Aveda, Onis, he takes a Shvua, and he doesn't have to pay. Halacha psuka, psukim in the Torah, whole sugim bab mitzia. Shoel has to pay everything. I mean, there are obvious reasons why, because a shomachinam is watching, not getting paid. A shoel has full benefit, so if anything goes wrong, he's obligated. A shomasacha, or a socher rents, it's a machlokes in the Gemara and the Mishnah actually, what his status is, but we paskin he's like a shomer socher who's getting paid. If it's nignab or avad, he has to pay. If it's a tremendous onus, then he takes a shvua and he doesn't have to pay. And those are the halacha three differentiations among the four different shomrim. No. You take the Gemara Babatsiya, Daf Tzadi Dalid Omer Aleph. And the Mishnah says, Matne Shomachinim Liot Potami Shvua. Vahashoa Liot Potami Lishalem. Vinose Sacha Vahasocha Liot Turim Shvu Me Lishalem. What are they talking about? How can this be? That's like what I just said a minute ago. Someone comes along and says, I accept the laws of kashrut, but I want to eat fish in a treif restaurant. Someone comes along and says, I accept the laws of Shabbat, but I want a text on Shabbat. It's like someone comes along and says, I accept the laws of Taret Mishpacha, but I want to be Mavatel Shivanikiyam. You would laugh at the person, maledict him, dismiss him. And here it's an open Mishnah. So the Gemara says, that's our very question. Matna Masha Katuv Betorahu. V'chol HaMatna Masha Katuv Betorah Tanai Batel. The Gemara asks our very question, how can he do such a thing? He's changing the words of the Torah. He's changing open halachot. He's changing parshat mishpatim and shmot. This is where all these halachot are. How can he do such a thing? And the Gemara answers, b'davashem amomon tana'u kayam. When it comes to monetary matters, you can knock out the Torah law. The Torah is guidance, but it doesn't obligate. It's not like Issa v'cheta. And, no, the Gemara gives the unbelievable example. I'll quote the pasuk to you first. Parshat Mishpatim, where we talk about a number of riyas, perik chaf aleph pasuk yud. So you all know that if the man takes another wife for himself, in addition to the Omer of Ria whom he married, imacheret yikachlo she'era ksuta v'onata lo yigra. What is the simple meaning of she'era? What does Rashi say? Food. I know the Ramban has a different meaning, but it's not for now. I quoted the Ramban Dafko when I spoke about sex and marriage in the Monday class. Ksuta, clothes. For onata, the sexual rights of the first woman, you cannot diminish it. No, I want to ask you a question. A man comes along, and in the New York Times here, what goes on today, and what goes on in our world with the whole rebellion of the left wing pushing more left and more left, a guy comes along and he says to a lady, Haret Mukadeshet Li, but the whole concept of sexual restrictions does not apply. I can do whatever I want. Marriage does not interfere with my animal-like sexual life. No, a man comes along and says to a lady, Haret Mukadeshet Li, but I will not feed you. A man comes along and says to a lady, you are a world-class lawyer, you make 5 times the salary I make, I will not pay for your clothes. No, what does the Gemara say? When it comes to clothes and food, if the man and woman agree, Tana'a, Hatanai Chayam. When it comes to sexual matters, Matne Alma Shekatov B'Torah. What's the difference? One is Dine Mamonot and one is Dine Isa V'Heta. With me, Danny? What a difference. Wow. Open Gemara. Bab Mitzia. Open Gemara, and I have to tell you that in modern times, you've already seen it. It's not that I'm happy about it, but you see these women are insulted by the Ketuvah. I've had questions like this. Insulted. What? I have a PhD. My husband has a lowly master's. I don't need him to support me. And you wind up there, you have 2 ketuvah. Have you ever seen that? Where the woman gives the man a ketuvah that she should not feel inferior. No, am I happy about it? Absolutely not. I'm an old-fashioned individual. I think a man is a man, a woman is a woman. I have very different ideas on that topic than the New York Times. But nevertheless, halachically, nothing wrong with it. What can you do? See, it's all part of that same syndrome of the double ring. I have grandchildren today walking around with rings on their fingers. Baruch Hashem, they didn't do it under the chuppah. They're from boys, but they wear a ring. I say, why are you wearing a ring? Well, if she wears a ring and people have to know that she's married, people have to know that we're married. It's a concept equal. I don't want to be embarrassed. He should support me. Where I come from, I told you many times, I was privileged to hear this with my own ears from the good Lord. Who do I mean the good Lord? No, Yaakov, who's the good Lord? Who was my neighbor and davened next to me for a number of years when he retired? Lord Emmanuel, Sir Emmanuel Lord Jacobowitz. So, and I knew him yet from the old country. I once had him speak in my shul when he wasn't the Lord yet, wasn't sir. He was just Manny Jacobowitz. So we go back a long way. So he tells me, he says to me, Aaron, he says, my last Shabbos, you probably know the queen invited me to the castle. Late Shabbos, it was a big thing, a big public. And he says, you know, before I went for Shabbos, I had to meet with the queen's representatives to teach me etiquette. And they taught me that you don't start a conversation. The queen will start the conversation, and whatever she starts talking with you about, that's the conversation you continue. So here it is Friday night, and you can imagine Ein Ani Yud B'Makom HaShirut, they call the Gemara in Menachat, and what they're so on Zvachim, and what they're serving, and Galat Kosha, and right after Kiddush, and he explains Kiddush and Atila Jadayim and the Motzi, the queen turns to Lord Jacobowitz and says, "Tell me, Rabbi, why did you have such success with your children and I had such failure with mine?" What a question. And he answered her, Chinuch, what he answered. I told Malka. Malka says to me, it's the wrong answer. The answer is very simple. She was a working mother. Okay? So you see, this Gemara, when I learned this Gemara as a kid, I couldn't comprehend it. How can it be a woman is getting married and she's letting the man say to her, I'm not paying for your clothes, I'm not paying for your food. How can it be? All right, the Gemara says, the Tanai is Chal. Dinei Mamonot. But wow, do I understand that Gemara today. But now I'm going to show you a Gemara. I'm going to show you something amazing. Watch. Gemara in Bava Metzia. Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. Now this is the most famous Gemara when it comes to Dini Mamonot and Min HaKoveya. This is the heart of all of Choshen Mishpat. This is the heart of our entire lifestyle and business. It's four or five lines in the Gemara. Okay, what's the Gemara talking about? Once again, wine. Jews were very big in the wine industry. As a matter of fact, just as a point of knowledge for you, later in Poland, where they can't grow wine, it's a much colder country, they get very involved in the liquor industry, hard liquor. And this is why we have Mechirat Chametz. If you've studied and done your own research, I mean, I don't have time now to go into it, obviously, but I've given Shayurim, you can speak for it now, is how did Mechirat Chametz develop? We have a little Tosefta, but there the Chametz moved, it changed. Today, a guy owns 50 different bottles of scotch, and he goes to the rabbi, and he, Rabbi, sell my chametz. Fine, the rabbi sells the chametz, and he makes a contract, and then the scotch doesn't budge. It remains where it is, and after Pesach, he waits an hour till the chag is over, till he's sure the rabbi brought it back, and he can't wait to pour a little scotch for himself. Et gehunget for scotch, the ganze Pesach. All right. Where did we get involved? Mechirat Chametz is a fallout, not from the wine industry, because the wine industry is not chametz. But when the Jews went to Poland and White Russia and the Ukraine, and there already you're not going to grow grapes, it's a different climate, oh boy, did they get involved in the whiskey industry. And then came the tremendous problem of Pesach. A guy has thousands of bottles, what's he going to do? And then they kept on expanding, you'll see, the early Achronim, the whole concept of Mechirat Chametz, until it reaches the level of our Mechirat Chametz today. It's a very fascinating topic. Now, guy has wine. Fine. I'm the manufacturer. Baruch Hashem, it's been a good year. My vineyard produced 1,000 caskets of top quality wine. All right. Yecheskel comes along and he wants to sell wine. And he buys 100 barrels from me. Now, when do these barrels become his? Me'ikar hadin, he has to do meshicha. Pull them away. Show ownership. But he doesn't have where to store it. He doesn't have where to put it. I'm a wine merchant. I have storage. I have where to keep it. You do not. So what do? And I'll give you the exact words of the Gemara, but let me explain it. He marks the barrels that he bought. He marks the barrels. The barrels haven't budged. He hasn't touched the barrels. and he marks them with a magic marker, whatever you want to call it. He paints his name on it. And then as he sells, he moves them out one by one by one by one. When did the barrels become his? For the sake of argument, the terrible tornado came along and destroyed the whole warehouse. Whose loss is it? It's his loss. The minute he put the mark on, if that's minin kamakom, then min hakamakom is that the barrel of wine is yours the minute you marked your identity on it. No, it's not the halacha. It's not Torah Shabbat Peh. It's not the Mishnah. It's not our basic concept. But minhag koveya halacha in dinei mamonat. And listen to this Gemara. This marking of the barrel is called situmta. Samach yud, situmta. It's a catch word. This is the rubric for any... Here, situmta means... How do I know what it means? I look into Rashi. Choteim shirosh minach en vanim ala chaviyot shol yayin shelokhim habay biyachad umenichim otam biyotze habaalim umolichin otam achad achad bimkol lachanut v'roshmim otam ladat shekol harishumot nimkarot. How do I know what simtumta means? Rashi tells us. Rashi is beautiful. How did Rashi know all this? No, what was Rashi's profession? Rashi was a wine merchant, right or wrong. Rashi knew winemaking. Rashi was involved in this very industry in Franco Germany. That you should read Reb Chaim's Yainam, the big machloket, Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi, and the whole wine industry. And what about if a guy touches the barrel? And what about if a guy squeezes open the wood in the barrel and tries to lick a little wine out? No, becomes stam yainam. I mean, these are problems we never dreamt about. But Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, they were in the wine industry. They knew these problems. They understood these problems. So the Gemara says, "Hai simtumta kanya," that this concept of marking the barrel is the halacha. And the Gemara says, "What do you mean? It's the halacha? It's really Yecheskel's loss?" Well, no. Does it mean? Well, I'll give you another example. Yecheskel says to, for the sake of argument, Danny is the wine manufacturer. He owns the vineyards. He sells 100 barrels to Yecheskel. Yecheskel marks up these 100 barrels. He moves one off to his store. And then a guy comes along from the neighboring city and says to Danny, "I'll give you twice the price. This is fabulous wine." So Danny, having learned Gemara, says, "Well, Chesky didn't make a kinyan yet. He just marked it. That's not really a kinyan. There was no Mashiach. I'll sell it to you." So that's what the Gemara says. What do you mean that this is the minhag? Is it only a mishapara? Do we only mishapara? You know, to say that he sinned and then God should avenge his sin, do we just give a mishapara? Or no? Is it a real kinyan? It's not just a mishapara. You have no right to sell it. The sale is invalid. Yecheskel already bought it. Uba atrin in ahi lemakne mamish kanu. That in a place where this is the minhag, this is the kinyan, this is yours, you bought it, you marked it, it is yours, period. If that's the case, it's a lot more than a mishapara. The whole second sale is voided, is abrogated, is nullified, is invalid. And that's the Gemara. And the word simtumta becomes the rabbinic aphorism, the rubric, for any type of minhag hamakom. Simtumta wins out. We don't look at the halacha. Lema'aseh, we have to call in the experts. What do you do on a practical, operative basis? My dear students, we have arrived. I'm going to give you a special gift now.
Can we open the window?
Yeah, well, we can open the air conditioning if you wish. One second. You want to open the air conditioning? Well, no, I just want to be sure it's not too cold. Oh my God, 19. God, what are we, Eskimos? Okay. Okay, and if we can open up another window in the meantime, we have the air conditioning. I don't know. What? No, I made it low. I made it 21, but I put it on lower, so I shouldn't hear noise. The windows are open. You'll cool. You'll get all excited in a minute. You'll see something amazing. So let me review. We had a real tremendous problem. We're from Jews. What's going on here? Mina kovei halacha. All right. Dinei mamonet. Dinei yisa v'heta. All right. So first we want to discuss dinei mamonet. And we see clearly that dinei mamonet is guidance from the Torah, but you can alter it, you can change it. The minhag is koveya. And this is open Gemara. You know, you don't need any chidushim here. We saw with the Dalet Shomrim, it's not matna masha kotev betorah, it's dinei mamonet. We saw with sher and ksut, according to the Rambam, it would only be ksut. Sher means something else according to the Rambam. But according to Rashi, sher means food. So we see clearly, sher v'ksut, the man and woman can agree to knock out. They can make an agreement. We are not obligated. If the woman says, I don't want your support. I can make five times the living that you can make. And I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't need a ketubah. Okay? And the same thing with food, with clothes. When it comes to the sexual aspects of marriage, this is isvaheta. You cannot change. You cannot make a deal. Imagine the woman will say, look, I grew up with the New York Times. We want an open marriage. I don't want to have to explain that word. That's a modern word, an open marriage. No, an open marriage is against kol ha-Torah kula, and there's no way that you can make a tanai that would sustain an open marriage, chas v'chalila. Now, then you see the Gemara Simtumta, a very powerful Gemara. And as I said to you, that word Simtumta, while it technically means marking up the barrel, but essentially it's a lot deeper than marking up a barrel. It means any basic minhag wins out. Now, I did something very interesting. I opened up Schottenstein. I wanted to see something. I wanted to see if they trace Simtumta down to the New York legal system. I was curious. What does this mean? They have these notes on the bottom. They elaborate. How far do they go? And very interesting note. I'm quoting now from Schottenstein 74A1, if that helps you. Chapter 5, Bava Metzia. And the Sumta Gemara, Simtumta, they quote the Gemara, and footnote 11. And listen to what Schottenstein says. Since by merchants usage, marking the barrels is regarded as finalizing a deal, it is accepted by the halacha as such, and it legally causes the property to be transferred. Therefore, the parties cannot retract. Fine. That's exactly Rashi, exactly the Gemara. Then he goes further. Not only marking barrels, but any other custom of the merchants is vested with halachic force as a legal mode of acquisition and is known as Kinyan Simitutma. Wow. Situtma has far-reaching applications and includes such acts as a handshake or the delivery of keys in the conveyance of a house. Indeed, the Rush cites Rabbeinu Hananel, who actually translate Situmta as a handshake. So you notice this paragraph. Fascinating, absolutely correct. Situmta is a code word. It goes much further. It's whatever the local form of acquisition is, that's what is halakhically acceptable. Hold on 1 second. Halakha is knocked out by minhag ha-makom. And even a handshake at times. Or delivering the key. What are you talking about, a handshake? Those of you that are rabbanim who have sold chametz, one of the things we do when we sell chametz, we do every type of kinyan imaginable. Meshicha, hagba, kesef. And we even do a handshake. It's based upon this very thought. We want to be sure the guy is gaining acquisition. Some people will collect keys. There are rabbanim who collect keys, which they will symbolically hand over to the Gentile, that he actually has the keys. This is minhag hamakom. Yeah, go ahead, Yitzhak.
I remember in one of your lectures, you gave the example in 47th Street.
That's exactly what I'm leading into. Exactly what I'm leading into. Kol hakavod. What's lacking here, and this is what I wanted to see if they include, because if you're going to give a lecture on this in public, there's one more. It's a very fascinating topic, and this is a topic that will interest a modern audience of various backgrounds. It'll certainly interest lawyers, people that have legal training. But there's one topic they didn't go further, and that's what I wanted to say. And I'll tell you what the topic is. It's very simple. And this has to be checked out. What I had hoped would be, there'd be another paragraph with the exact citation and source. This happened, again, I'm trying to recall, probably in the 1990s. It reached the New York Times legal section. What happened was very simple. You all know that the Diamond District on 47th Street, a good deal of the Diamond District, is in the hands of religious Jews, many of them Hasidic Jews. By the way, the diamond industry in Israel is no different. There's a very large percentage of frum Jews in it and many Hasidic Jews. Whatever the reasons are, from Antwerp, from Belgium, I don't know, it could be there's a South African input, but a lot of frum Jews are in the diamond business. I've taught many young people who went on to taking over their father's business, their uncle's business, and they've done very well in the diamond industry. It seems that even in recession, diamonds are still bought. It's interesting because in a recession, luxury items do not sell. Fancy watches, you sell much less, whatever you want to describe, something that's a luxury. In a recession, you don't have extra money. But diamonds are a girl's best friend, and even in a recession, that evidently holds true. Okay, fine. So a Afro-American and a Hasidic Jew concluded a deal. And how do you conclude a deal on 47th Street? Mazel u'bracha. You shake hands, mazel u'bracha. Do you know the Hasidic Jew backed out of the deal? The Afro-American took him to court, and he said, the Afro-American, he is a black American testifying in court. I told him, ich hab ihm gesagt, mazel u'bracha. He tells the judge. And you should know that the judge ruled that the Afro-American Diamond Man was correct, the deal holds. Mazel Ubracha in 47th Street is the same as a Simtumta. It is a Simtumta. It's no different than marking a barrel. It's no different than a handshake. No different than the delivery of keys. So you see, this Gemara in Bav Metzia Ayin Dalet affects all of the dynamics of halacha when it comes to business dealings, monetary dealings. It goes so far that that judge, who may have been Jewish, may not have been Jewish, I don't know, but that judge halachically was absolutely correct. If the minhag ha'makom is that mazel u'bracha with a handshake completes the deal, and it doesn't matter whether you're Jewish or not Jewish, it doesn't matter what the color of your skin is, it doesn't matter what language is your native tongue, that completes the deal. That judge absolutely ruled correctly, and it made the New York Times a fascinating development as a result of the Gemara of Simtumta.
Isn't it terribly sad that the Mishnah, Koso, Kaso, and Kiso.
Okay.
Here we see that when it comes to Kiso, it was a Fum Yidden fallback.
Yitzchak, I will quote Rakefet to you. Do you understand the Torah that the Jews just left Egypt? Masheratu Shifcha. Aliyam Suf, Loa Ayecheski Ben Buzi, because you're not Shalom. It's a Tanchum, I believe. Rashi quotes it. Do you want? And then a minute later, they're dancing around the golden calf. Do you understand that? God gives a Torah. Lo Tirtzach. Lo Tinaf. Lo Taneh Bereacha Eid Sheka. Who are we giving the Torah to? Jews that just saw the greatest miracles. What sins? Would you ever dream of doing such a sin? Now, what can I tell you? Lo aleinu, humans remain humans, and who would ever dream that in the Torah world, a Svadik Rebbe would be killed by a Chassid? Did that just happen? When was it? Last summer? How long ago did it happen? Right or wrong? Abu Chatzirayim, am I right or wrong? Down south. Who can believe it? Who can believe it? The sexual sins? What we're hit with in the newspaper daily? What we're hit with on the websites daily? Who can believe it? God have mercy. There's now in America someone who descends from Malachim. The charges against them are unbelievable. God have mercy. Descends from Malachim. Ay, what can I tell you? It's a sad message because for me, I don't understand it until today. But these are human beings. This is the world. This is the reality. We live in a different world. We grew up. We saw Gedolei Yisrael. We saw Kedusha. We saw Tahara. From the age of 12, I've only known greatness, saintliness, dedication. I never saw anything else. It's hard for me to conceive. Yitzchak asked a good question. But that's the reality. Okay. Let me go one step further. Now, what about Issa v'Heta? What about the Gemara, the Yerushalmi, that we tell Eliyahu HaNavi, go fly a kite. Minhag mevatel et ha-halacha. And what Jews do, that's what counts. And we're talking about Issa v'Heta. Now, this is a very interesting question. And I'm going to attempt to give you a very important basic answer that has many practical implications. I'll give you some major Rishonim. But I'm telling you in advance that after Sukkot Be'ezrat Hashem, I'll give a much simpler answer, which may or may not be correct. You'll understand. but that resolves all the difficulty. But let's begin taking everything at face value. I want to deal with Professor alone after Sukkot. And it's not just that he says it, others say it too, but at least we have a major source, Professor Menachem Elon, whose work on Mishpat Ivri is second to none. But we'll talk about that after Sukkot. It's an open Gemara. I'm quoting to Mesechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tet Vav Amud Bet. And the Gemara is talking about, we all know, when is Rosh Hashanah Li'ilanot? You all learned, I trust, over Rosh Hashanah, the four prakim in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, and you have Abba Rosh Hashanim Haim, which I don't have to tell you, one of the Rosh Hashanah, when do we give Trumat Maisrat from Peira to Ilan? When does the new year begin? And when do we paskin the new year begins? Tu Bishvat. So that means any pre that didn't blossom before Tu Bishvat is counted as part of the new year. Anything that blossomed before, you can only give Trumat and Maisrat from similar peirot that blossomed before. Right? That's what the new year is about. It's the cutoff point. We give Trumat and Maisrat from everything that blossoms this year, or everything born this year, you understand? But then there's a, for Behemoth, it's a different date. But for Peirot, Ta'ilan, it's Tu Bishvat. Fine? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tet Vav Amid Bet, discusses Rabbi Nechemya's opinion that Minig Yisrael is that Charuvim, Buxus, St. John's bread, whatever name you call it by. When you get older, you can't eat that anymore because it breaks your teeth. I used to love Buxus, but every time I ate it after the age of 50 already, I chipped a tooth. So now I have no real teeth left, basically. I ought to try again. Maybe I can, with these crowns, I can manage. But all right, I don't want to bother my son-in-law so much. It's enough when I have to bother him. But buxus, it's very cheap. In Israel, you'll find it on the floor. I don't know, there are trees that grow and it falls on the floor. No one even picks it up. It's hefker. Anyone can take buxus, St. John's bread. So Rabbi Nechemya says, even though it blossoms before Tu Bishvat, the minig is to give Trumat Maisret only with the next year, with the next crop. Okay? So the Gemara asks, and this is what we're all saying, B'moko misura ki nohagu shafkinin lei? That if it's Issa v'heta, so big deal, they have a minhag? But when a minhag is shelo kadin, we let them continue? And that's exactly the question we have to ask. That if you vomit, if the Gemara says what it says, and Eliyahu Navi comes along and says, you're doing incorrectly, and that a sandal is not a good shoe, and it's not strong enough, and it's not warm enough, and it doesn't give enough support, it's not a Rockport, what do they call those shoes? What's the word they use? You know, for shoes, there's a word that it's supposed to be good for the foot. Orthopedic. It's not an orthopedic shoe. A doctor told me that's a lot of baloney. There's no such thing as an orthopedic shoe. There's no copyright on the word. And there's no association that checks, is it orthopedic? Isn't it orthopedic? So anyone can use the word orthopedic. But if Eliyahu Navi comes along and says that this is not a proper shoe, so you're going to tell him? The minhag is what counts? What's going on here? So it could be, and I'll show you the sources, but let me explain it. It could be, and this becomes critically important, that not always do we know exactly what the halacha is. So machlokes hapaiskim. I think you know one of the most beautiful parts of learning, if you have an intellectual mind, is there's always a challenge. Who's correct? Who is right? You begin learning Mishnah, the first Masechet, you started Brachot again, Meimet, Karmenet, Hashma, and immediately in the first Mishnah, you have three different opinions. And this is the halachic system. Is this good? Is this bad? I'll only answer you, it's the reality. To move sideways for a minute and just forget about the topic under discussion. But take this topic one step further. Tell me, is it good to teach youngsters Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? Wasn't this problem raised one time in a lunch foot when Rabbi Lichtenstein had a question and answer period, what they called a press conference, and this very question was asked of Rabbaran. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, what's wrong with Kitzur? What's wrong with Kitzur? Because the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch gives you the opinion, everything is black and white. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, there's no machlokes, this is what you have to do. On the other hand, what are you going to do? Take an 8-year-old kid, a 9-year-old kid, and start teaching him a machlokes rishonim? It's a very fascinating question. And I don't know if there's a black and white answer. I certainly would be inclined, even to an 8, 9-year-old kid, to already explain to him that there's various opinions, there's various psakim. Halacha at times is not monolithic. There is an amorphous feeling to the greater gestalt of the halachic system. On the other hand, maybe I'm crazy. An 8, 9-year-old kid, what are you doing? You're confusing the kid. Doesn't the kid need authority? I don't know. It's an interesting question. Maybe we can give the kid authority, but we have to give him a feeling that there is a Yam HaTalmud out there, and there's a lot of room to swim in many different directions. I don't know. I would be interested in hearing a reaction from someone who's taught children 9, 10, 11 years old. But when you talk about the halacha, yes, it can be Sivaheta. But somehow, we're not clear. What do we do halacha lema'aseh? And there you have an unbelievable viewpoint in Chazal, which is the dominant viewpoint. We watch and see what the Torah people do. The Hamon Ha'am is koveya the halacha. The matter is in doubt, to use the term that the Yerushalmi uses, that the Rishonim use, rofefet. Halacha rofefet, rofef. Doubt. You just don't know. We just don't know? Then ultimately, it's the people that make the decision. And this is what we mean when we say that minhag koveya halacha, or minhag mevatel halacha. Now, obviously, if you talk like this, then look into the responsa of the conservative rabbinate in the 50s into the 60s, 40s, 50s, 60s, when the Committee on Jewish Law of the Rabbinical Assembly was still concerned with halacha. So many times you'll find they expressed this opinion. But the problem is where they express this opinion and they say, we see what the people are doing, who we are talking about? We're talking about people who don't observe, people who are not committed. You'll see that this opinion comes up with Yontif Sheni. This opinion comes up with fish in a treif restaurant. this opinion comes up with non-kosher wine, stam yenam, and we have to understand when we talk about what the people do, we're talking about people who are committed, people who live Torah, people who observe Torah, people who follow Torah, people whose lifestyle is filled with Torah. These are the people we're talking about. And that, of course, is a sine qua non. You can't go and look what the people are doing, people who are distant from Yahadut, from Yiddishkeit, from Torah, from commitment, from surrender to Torah. This is a word that no one uses today. This is what Torah is all about. Surrender to Torah. This is a word that many Jews don't want to hear. This is why there's so many Jews are angry at Israel, because Israel is Jewish. Israel has kippot all over the place. Israel has public observance of Shabbat. Israel has public observance of Kashrut. Surveys show that within 20 years, what's going to happen in Israel is going to be horrible. The majority of the country are going to be Datiyim, Haredim. You all know what's going on. Those are not the Jews we're talking about. That cannot establish halacha. But it means the Jews who care, the Jews who live. And this can very well be the explanation of Yevamot, that even in Iser V'Heta, when you are in doubt, when you don't know what the halacha is l'ma'aseh, go and see what the people are doing. Fuk Hazi, Amadava. I'll give you all the sources, but not yet. Imlo Neviyim Heim, B'nei Neviyim Heim. Now, this is a very powerful thought, and of course, it puts Iser V'Heta into context. And Ein Hachinami, it shows you ultimately the power of Am Yisrael, or what, and Lahavdil, but I want to quote the term of you, Solomon Schechter used the term Catholic Israel. The universal house, Catholic from the sense of universal. He used that term. In that respect, he was correct. There is an intrinsic power to the universal Jewish people. What the believing Jews do, ultimately, can determine halachic practice. When there's machloiket, when there's controversy, when we are not certain which way the halacha goes. And here I'll tell you a little story that had a great impact on me that says exactly this concept. It's my third year in high school. My third year in high school, and I went to a wonderful high school. I don't know whether MTA of today holds a candle to what MTA was in my days, but it was a wonderful, wonderful high school. And I had a Rebbe, it was my second Rebbe in the yeshiva, because for the first 2 years I had Rebbe Michal Katz. The second Rebbe I had was Rebbe Yosef Weiss. Should live and be well. He's my only Rebbe who's still alive. Does he still teach in the yeshiva? Does anyone know? Rabbi Yosef Weiss has to be well into his 90s today.
He's still on the poster board.
Excuse me?
He's still on the YU poster board.
He's on the YU poster board. Okay, Baruch Hashem, but that doesn't mean he got smicha in 1940, so let's say he was about 20 in 1940. He was a milui. That's 70, he's well into his mid-90s today. He's my only Rebbe alive. Daniel, right? Daniel Abraham, where is Simcha Lauer? Nathaniel Fishman, Daniel Schumann, Yecheskel Gorelick, Sam Frumson. He was sitting here last week. Yehudi Yisrael, anyone know how his father is doing? He went back, he told me, I never. Anyone know? We don't know anything. If anyone knows, let me know. If there's anyone not in this list who's in the class, add your name afterwards, okay? So, coming back here, so in Rabbi Weiss's class, we started to learn He introduced us to the Mashar, to the Maram. It's a whole debate today, as you all know, as they claim the Briska Derech totally eradicated the learning of the Maram, the Mashar, the Mashal. But in Rav Weiss's class, we would look in to these Achronim, early Achronim, and the I believe it's in the Mashar, he has an expression, Makshin Ha'olam, the Welt Frek, the world asks. So I once said to Rav Weiss, Rebbe, you know, what is the was meint das? What does it mean? And in class we spoke Yiddish. Outside of class, he was a Native American, at least his English was native. So outside of class I spoke English to him, but in class we spoke Yiddish. So I asked him, Rebbe, was meint das the Welt Frek, the world? I said, what world? Who gives a hoot? The people out in the street care about the Gemara, Rashi, or Tosfot? He said, the world that counts. The world that counts. And that answer is exactly the point I want to make today, that no one should take the sources I'm about to start showing you now, and we'll finish next time we meet Be'ezrat Hashem. No one should translate it. It's the masses. The masses, God have mercy, in the modern world with the influence of Western civilization, the last word in the world that the New York Times people will use is surrender. There's no concept of surrender. Religion is not man looking up to God. Religion today is God looking down to man. Whatever man wants to do, that's religion, etc. But this means the world that counts. Now, where do we see this? And here's the source that all the Rishonim quote. It's in Yushalmi Yevamot, Perek Shvi, Halacha Gimel. And it deals with a very interesting question. This is a question we discussed last year in inter-ethnic marriages. A daughter of an Israelite marries a Kohen. Okay? No, if the daughter of an Israelite marries a Kohen, she eats truma, she becomes somewhat like a Kohenet, if I can use that word. By marrying this Kohen, she picks up some of the stature, the holiness of a Kohen. And then Lo Aleinu, the Kohen dies. But she's pregnant. She is pregnant. Okay. The man was wealthy. He left servants, avadim. Who will ultimately inherit the servants? The child that's going to be born. If that's the case, then maybe the servants can still eat truma even before the child is born, because she is pregnant. And if she is pregnant, she's going to have a child. And if he is a boy, he will inherit. And when he inherits, she has children from a Kohen. And they are going to be Kohanim. And therefore, the servants can eat due to the pregnancy. And there's a whole machloket in the Gemara. And the Pnei Moshe explains that one opinion is Uba b'vnei zara zahu, that an embryo in the womb of a woman who is not a Kohen but a Zara, because her husband has died, the Kohen has died, the child in the woman's womb is still a Zar, and the Avadim cannot yet eat. What will happen later is a different story. If the children are born and they're healthy and they survive, then they inherit the Avadim and the servants can eat, but that is later. Listen to the words of the Gemara. This is a machloket. A question like this actually happened. Now, again, when you view the Gemara, This is something I at a very early age when I started teaching Gemara in 62 in high school kids in YU. And I remember these kids used to ask me, Rebbe, did this ever happen? And there's some cases in the Gemara, I don't want to quote them, you know, they're really ludicrous and some of them are lewd. But they say, did this ever happen? If you know the Gemara I'm referring to, with the person falling. So I said to the kids, did you ever open a law book? Did you ever study law? The Gemara is trying to establish principles. Doesn't mean the case actually happened or will ever happen, but the principle becomes important in determining law and determining halacha. And I said in general law, it's exactly the same way. When you have a legal textbook, you have endless principles. Did it ever happen? Perhaps not. But the principles become important if a case where you can apply this principle happens. So the Gemara tells an unbelievable story. A case actually happened, and they came to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and he didn't know what to answer. And he went and told them, Re'ei, tzei ure'ei, eich hatzibor noheg. Go out and see what the Jewish people do in such a case. And Rabbi Abun, B'shem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, V'lo gabah halachazu. It doesn't mean we can give a definitive halacha here. But listen to these words now. Ela kol halacha shehi rofefet bebeitin v'eino yodin mativa tzei ure'ei eichat zibur noheg unahug. Any time you have a halacha that's amorphous, weak, not clear, machloket, we can see it either way. Logically speaking, we can see it either way. The woman is pregnant, she'll give birth, that kid who's going to be born is going to inherit, he's going to be a Kohen. Why can't the Avadim eat? Or no, Kozmani's not born, he's not real, he's not here. An Uba, he's in a woman who's not a Kohen, she's now returning to her father's house, unless she has a living child, which will enable her to retain her kohunaship. Till that happens, it's a czar. The Avadim can't eat. And if you don't know...
What about her? Could she eat?
No, she can't eat until the baby's born. Would be this same thing.
Does this mean that an embryo is not a person?
It doesn't mean an embryo is not a person, but the embryo does not have the obligations of a person or the configuration of a person until we know he's a living human being. An embryo is not a complete person. That certainly is for sure. Okay, so and go and see what the tzibur does. And the Gemara says, "Va'anan chamei tzibura d'lom michlan." And he says, "I went out and checked, and I saw that the tzibur is noheg that avadim cannot eat if the woman is a meuberet." Wow. What a important Yerushalmi. What words in the Yerushalmi. And let me end off with one more Gemara. A Gemara that you all know. The basis of life is water. Our body, I don't know, those of you that studied biology, what was it? 82% of our body? Something like that. 82% is water. Without water, we can live without food. You all know on a fast day, what do we suffer from the most? We're thirsty. Food, you can eat like a king before the fast, and you're okay. But water. I was offered a rabbinate this year. It was so funny. So when they called me and they heard I'm a... I told them, and they offered me heavy money. I said to them, too little, too late. I said, at my age on Yom Kippur, I sit in my chair, I don't budge. I want to get through the day, but covered, you understand? But I look back, you got, you know, I was in the rabbinate, how hard I worked on Yom Kippur. Wow, and I didn't have a problem. I remember I was a youngster, and you speak, and yet the shul is filled. And then at the end of Yom Kippur, I would announce, right after Ne'ilah, by the way, what I did in my shul, I trust you don't have to do it today, I daven Maariv before Tkiyat HaShofar. Because otherwise, at the end of Ne'ilah, you blew shofar, everyone ran out. You know, Nebuch, what you're up against in those days. So, I said, you're not going to be held a minute later. We're going to finish when the fast ends. But it's a disgrace to God that the first davening after Yom Kippur, you run away. Of course, the bottom don't understand that. But and then I would announce, this is on Yom Kippur. And I'm happy to announce that our next service will be next Rosh Hashanah. Give them the date and give them the approximate time. It was, a subtle reminder that the shul is open all year. But all right, the Gemara in Bracha Daf Mem Hei Omer Aleph, because water is so important. So everything you make a bracha, you have a candy bar, Shachom Yevet Varon, an apple, Bari Priyaitz. Water is so important, maybe it needs a special bracha, not just a bracha, not like a bircha tanenin, but a bracha of shevich v'hodaya. So it's a whole machloiket. Do you make shahakol before you drink a glass of water, or do you make borei nefashat? And the Gemara didn't know what to do. Amale Rabba Babar Khanala Baye Ramalela Rab Yosef Hilchatambay. What should we do? Rebbe, I want to know what to do. What bracha should I make? Amale Fuk Chazi Mai Ama Devar. Go out of the Beit Medrash and see what the people are doing. And boy, that Gemara says it all. A little different than the Yerushalmi, but exactly the same concept. So I want to reiterate, I'm far from finished, but I've put down, this is basic, axiomatic, to understanding the halachic system. When it comes to Dinim Mamonot, and I spoke about that in great length, this is why you can have a concept of Dinim de Malchut de Dinah. Remember I gave lectures years ago, I think I spent a whole year on Dinim de Malchut de Dinah. I published, I have a major work on it, it appears in Rakaf et Aron, Chelik Aleph or Chelik Bet, I don't remember, but it was published originally in Tradition, and it was republished a number of different times, that particular piece that I wrote on Dinah de Malchut de Dinah. It appears in a book that came out from Florida in Aleph, in the Aleph organization out of Bal Harbor. It's the first article in that book. They put it out, no one even asked me permission. I left them, I got in touch with them, at least send me a copy of the book. But I said I would gladly give permission, but people should ask. But that's life. There's no question that Dinim de Malchut de Dinah can only be a din, because when it comes to Dinim Mamonot, it is not the same demand, respect, and obedience like Issa v'Chetta. So we can understand that this is Simtumta, and this is Mazel u'Bracha. Fabulous concept. The judge ruled correctly. When it comes to dinner, Yisa v'Chetta, here we have a real problem in the guys. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, because the item is noheg to give Trumat Maestra after Tu B'Shvat, how do you change the halacha? It's an Isa. The plant germinated, blossomed before Tu B'Shvat. And that's the basic question. So I showed you to Shami Rofefet. We're not certain, does the slave eat or doesn't he? Go out and see what the people do. And I showed you the Babli, Fukhazi Amadava. My dear students, tomorrow morning, Be'ezrat HaNatein Le'yov Koach at 9 o'clock, I take you to a world that, as far as I know, not many have explored, and I have a lot of insight to share with you. And we continue with Isaac Lisa, and we're going to duel with Moshe Davis. Who was he? Why duel with him? Tomorrow's another day. Now, I have a number of freebies to give out. But, well, I just want to say something. Pass this back to Yitzchak. I want to just say something. If you give me another minute, I know that everyone's pressed for time because you're going to go to the shiur tonight. It should be Bracha v'Hatzlacha. It's the changing of the gods here. If we recall, we discussed the whole question of Rabbi Heschel Schechter and Rabbi Riskin and the whole question of the Catholic Church. I've read more and I've discussed it. I tell you, the truth is someplace in the middle. That Rabbi Heschel said that the Catholics convert here, that seems to be absolutely not true. They go out of their way now not to openly convert Jews, but that the Catholics really believe that ultimately all of us should become Catholics and believe, I don't know say in what, that all Christians believe in it. So we're caught someplace in the middle. As I said to someone, a very intelligent person, I said, we need the Rav here desperately. Rebbe would know exactly what the guidelines should be. I don't. But with Rabbi Heschel, what I'm holding in my hand is Rabbi Heschel Schachter's article, or a student put it together, put it on the website. I just want to tell you about his last paragraph, and there I have to tell you I disagree. Apparently the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael arouses strong feelings of spirituality that one must take care to channel properly. These strong feelings can mislead even the wise to get carried away by their imagination and desire to be original thinkers and in turn strengthen Avodah Zarah and Shmad. Some rabbis have gained credibility by claiming to be disciples of Rav Soloveitchik and then have proceeded to totally misrepresent his views on these issues of Avodah Zarah and Shmad. I just want to tell you what I disagree with. Don't blame it on Avira Diara de Eretz Yisrael. The rabbis in Eretz Yisrael are smarter than the rabbis in Chutz Laretz. People are going to be very angry at me for saying this, but it's an open Gemara. Avir di Aramach Kima. But so I don't want to get involved that Eretz Yisrael plays a factor, but I think we have a real challenge here. How do we come to a conclusion with not spitting in the face of the church? And what Rabbi Rubin said, many people have commented that you were absolutely correct. So that we owe a certain gratitude that they've changed their basic theological position. On the other hand, it gnaws away at me as a believing Torah Jew. He wants me to be one day to become a Christian. Chas v'chalila. All right, this is a challenge. What do we do now? B'yamot HaMashiach will know what to do, but what do we do now? The challenge is real. Now, in that issue of the... Did I tell you the story of the guy who was reburied because they found out that the graves on either side of him were Mechalalei Shabbos? So it seems I'm not the only one who was a little bit frightened by such a psak. And here there's information, Rav Avihud Schwartz, and then there's from the Rashi Yeshiva at Har Etzion, and they have a lot of sources on Tzadik Eitzel Russia, but to me there's nothing even to talk about. Because Bezman said there's no Rush, it's the Chazon Ish. Maybe you learned it in Hilchot Shchita, Perek Bet. There's no Hashkacha Gluyari after the Holocaust. We can't call people Rishayim. There's no Hashkacha. It's the Chazon Ish, black and white. So I agree with that 1,000,000%.
It's just an intellectual discussion. Because when you're building a highway and you find bones, and they say, oh, these are probably Jewish bones, even though the archaeologists say that they're Crusaders or they're Arabs.
Right.
And they have to spend millions of dollars to change the
right. Right.
Or you want to build a
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
And make it a bomb secure.
Right. Ashkelon. We know what's happening.
So you see that here, these Haredi characters, they gave themselves the heifer to move the bones. And when it comes to Jewish need in the country of Israel, oh, you're not allowed to move a bone.
Right. Now, but say that there's a big halachic problem if they gave the right psak. But be it as it may, these are sources. Finally, I want you to know a Reconstructionist rabbi, Rabbi Shlomo Lewis of Atlanta, gave an unbelievable drasha on the matzav of the state of Israel today and the world with Iran. I never saw a drasha like this, Kol HaKavod. And you should know the liberal blogs are attacking him like crazy, but boy, every word is absolute truth. I wish Obama would have it on his desk. Furthermore, anyone needs calendars for their room, I have a flock of calendars that come my way. No, if someone needs a calendar, take it. Otherwise, I have to throw it out. What am I going to do? Throw it out. And if anyone's going into Chinuch, here is Midei Chodesh V'Chodesho from the last two issues. This is very kedai. The editor is my own Talmud from BMT, early 70s. Until we meet in health and happiness tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., Das V'Danya.